Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Terence Corrigan. Let's get into our first news story of today, and this is a report from Business Live, which goes into a little bit of detail about some of the polling that's being done in the lead up to the next local government election. And boy, oh boy, are these numbers quite something. So according to polling done by the DA, the ANC would not get more than 20% of the vote in Johannesburg were the next local government elections to be held today. Now, that's a big caveat. A lot can change between now and election day. And as has been noted in many times in the past, the ANC actually often polls worse outside of election time when they don't have their election machinery running. Just for context, if you look at the ANC's vote percentage in the national elections, last year, the ANC got 34% of the vote, the DA about 24%, and MK about 13%, with the EFF about 12%. This is all in Johannesburg. If you go back to the last local government elections, the ANC got around about the same number, 33%. So this would constitute something like a 12 to 14 percentage point drop from where they have been in previous election cycles, which is quite a collapse, to say the least. Now, you may think, okay, well, this is just reporting, this is just the DA releasing good numbers. You know, the DA does have credible polling, but they also choose what they get to release, right? So it's very possible that the DA is only giving us the most rosy numbers. But Business Day went around and asked various other people to corroborate this. Most notably, an ANC insider who spoke to Business Day did not dispute the outcome of the DA polling, with one Lutuli House staffer who could only speak on condition of anonymity, admitting things could be worse. This is the ANC staffer being quoted. Quote, our information shows the ANC could get as little as 12% of the vote in Johannesburg. The leadership of the province and the city are accountable as they refuse the national leadership advice to enter a coalition with the DA, the source said. Now, if they got that, it would be a truly shocking number. Election sort of watcher and by-election watcher Wayne Sussman said that he had seen polling which had the DA on about 38% in Johannesburg, which is quite something. So, Terence, this really seems like another one of those canaries in the coal mine for the ANC. Things are not getting better for them electorally. Maybe at a national level, things are kind of okay. Maybe they've managed to win back some MK or EFF voters. But in the metros, they look set to take a real beating. And Johannesburg, it looks like, will be the sort of center point of trouble for the ANC. Do you agree? Do you think this polling is credible? What's your take on all of this?
I do. The fact that it comes from the DA shouldn't disqualify it. The DA is acknowledged by its opponents to have a very formidable polling machine. Yes, I think this all sounds credible. You're correct to point out, though, that this does come with the caveat that between elections, the ANC tends to poll worse. One of the explanations that's been floated to me, and this is by people both in the DA and outside, is that as the election draws closer, the ANC is able to create quite a hype. The community starts to, if I can appropriate a dreadful phrase, mobilize. And people who would otherwise be hostile or indifferent to the ANC don't want to be excluded, so they kind of join the party. I think, though, that this is a tactic that is unlikely to work, at least not to the extent it has in the past. The ANC's brand has become way too tarnished, and I think particularly amongst your urban population, which is more aspirant, which, let's say, it's a bit like sitting watching a dinner party from the outside and you can't quite get in. People who maybe are first or second generation, who may perhaps the limit of what they've been able to achieve is a sort of menial job and an RDP house, but you know you're in Jersey, you're in the city of gold. Surely there is more for you here. And the state of service provision, just things being, you know, keeping the lights on, it's not a strong recommendation. And this is not something that people are, my impression is not something people are going to ignore or forgive now. this isn't 1995 when perhaps you're seeing your neighborhood electrified for the first time. And if there are power outages, well, it's one of those things. We're better off now. I suspect there are many people who look back and say 10 years ago, things were better. Now, also remember when you have a mayor who comes and says, well, don't expect too much because there's not much I can do. Leadership is not visionary.
Can I just add that interview by Dado Moreira where he said that, you know, we can't expect much to change between now and the election was one of, you know, you may call it in some cases kind of honest about the way the city was going, but politically speaking, that was one of the worst interviews I think I've ever heard from a politician. In that, even being incoherent probably would have been better because everyone would have just rolled their eyes and forgotten about it in 2 weeks. To say that, just don't get your hopes up, guys, is such a devastating remark. I remember talking to an Uber driver while going somewhere, and he was complaining about the state of the city. And I mentioned this quote by the mayor to this guy, and he hadn't heard it before. And he said, "What? Did the mayor really say that?" He was horrified, and I could see it was a very genuine shock. He couldn't believe that the mayor had said this. And so it is. I think that was, in that quote, you kind of got everything that was wrong with the ANC and Joburg in one sort of succinct package.
And I think also the comment made by that insider about the refusal to work with the DA. Now, I'm sure that many of our viewers have misgivings about the GNU. Certainly some of our colleagues do. I do on occasion. But let me say that there's a mountain of pony evidence, has been for a long time, that this is a kind of arrangement that appeals to people, that we must put aside petty politics and do this for the good of the people. By very purposely keeping the DA out, well, you bought the problem and now you own it, the whole thing. And also, I think you communicate a message to many people who are just frustrated, who don't care about history and ideology, that you don't want to work with other people, you know, as we say, for the good of the people. And I think all of that is rapidly counting against them.
So Terence, you wrote a column whose piece is out, I think, today on the dailyfriend.co.za about where the ANC finds itself historically. And I think maybe it's worth just telling us a little bit about that. You can go read the full column at the dailyfriend.co.za. The title is Ghosts Haunt the Banks of South Africa's Roiling Rubicon, which is a very grand title. But could you break that down a bit for us?
Last week was the 40th anniversary of P.W. Botha's infamous Rubicon speech. For those who are either too young to remember or were too traumatized by the experience to want to remember, this was the moment when P.W. Botha was supposed to announce grand plans to fix the country as it was then, and to very significantly to try and reset South Africa's relationship with many of its foreign peers. South Africa was then under growing isolation. Well, P.W. Botha basically said, well, you know, screw you, I'm going to do my own thing. Don't push us too far. Our problems, we're going to solve them ourselves. Well, the Rand literally tumbled, and I think 2 weeks later they had to close the stock exchange because of the outflow of capital. And then we ended up with the schlenter of the financial Rand, which said if you wanted to take capital out of South Africa, you had to do it at a massive discount. It was an ingenious, if rather crooked, solution. What have we seen from the ANC, from Figeli and Balula in particular? Well, very much the same. We're willing to endure sanctions, and we're a sovereign country, etc., etc., etc. What both those experiences pointed to were, there were two nationalist projects which, about two generations into their incumbency, were running out of steam, running out of imagination, and confronting existential problems. For P.W. Botha, it was Afrikaner nationalism. For Figeli and Balula, it's African nationalism. They both fundamentally attempted to run the country as R.W. Johnson has said, to the exclusion of part of the population. And I think both have kind of arrived at the end of what they can intellectually and emotionally conceptualize. That's why for Buerta, group rights was going to be fundamental. The nomenclature of the time, one man, one vote, off the table. On the other hand, there was for Figeli and Balula, no, affirmative action is going to stay. BE is going to stay. Labor laws are going to stay. And these are all actually going to be intensified. So, yes, you know, the point is that the failure to at least see what, you know, the writing was on the wall meant that South Africa endured enormous damage for the next half decade, and that damage is not easily repaired. For the ANC, there seems to be no inclination to try and change tack or to even admit that there is a major problem. Well, there is a problem, but we need to discuss what it is, which I think is going to be the issue we're about to get onto.
Yes.
But yeah, you know, the thing is that, as I say, it's the sign of a political project that has effectively gone senile and is in the process of eviscerating itself.
Yes, and I think that's reflected in these polling numbers. As you mentioned, National Dialogue, we had the opening last week over the weekend, and let's just say that it didn't go amazingly well. Many groups, former presidents, associations and foundations, notably that of Thabo Mbeki, were boycotting this thing. You had lots of very rowdy delegates interrupting and getting upset about things. I'm just going to read some choice quotes here from Daily Maverick reporting on the whole thing, but I'm sure some people have seen the videos on social media of some of this stuff. Protesters had gathered outside the venue expressing frustration at being left out of the process already on Friday, saying they only learned the convention through the media, so there were people upset they weren't included. A delegate collapsed, prompting confusion and a brief scuffle on the stage. In a breakout session on crime and corruption, a facilitator asked a simple question, "What is the South Africa you dream of?" One person said, "I dream of a South Africa where education matters, where rural children are given the same tools as those in Gauteng." This is a teacher from Northwest Province saying this. "You give one child a laptop and internet access and another nothing, yet you expect them to compete equally. That's not a dream. That's a nightmare." Someone said South Africa's murder rate was 30 times worse than Ukraine, a country at war. And there were gasps from the audience. An older man, Bonginkosi Setswane, said that his grandson had been a victim of rape and said his life will never be the same again. "All I dream of is a return of scorpions. Back then, we saw real and swift action against criminals." One woman said, "We always boast about our constitution, but when will it become real for us? When will we see the consequence? The Zondo Commission told us everything we need to know, but where are the prosecutions?" President Ramaphosa was present at a session where an activist from the crowd shouted, "We are the foot soldiers. We know what's happening on the ground. All of you here have bodyguards and we don't. You say it's a national dialogue, but you shut us down. You are here because the 2026 elections are coming. You're trying to buy our silence." A guy from the Rastafarian community said, "You don't come here to talk down to us. Stop telling us what to do. We are here to speak." And you get a general idea of the whole thing. And then the worst was perhaps when they presented summaries from some of the breakout sessions. Some people got very upset and said that this was misrepresentation of what had actually been said in those breakout sessions. One person said to me, "Terence, it's as if you could feel the ANC's credibility sort of ebbing away slowly through the cracks." Not exactly, I think, what Thabo Mbeki was hoped this would go.
You know, I can't quite get my head around it. Somebody, Cyril Ramaphosa, whatever one may think of him, and I've been extraordinarily critical, is not a stupid man. How did he not see that this was going to happen? This is a guy who's been in politics since the 1980s. You know, pretending to be shocked isn't going to sell in this forum. Maybe you can represent that in Parliament, you know, where you have a sympathetic majority, but not even now. What this, I think, seeks to achieve now, I think that there is some truth to that, to the buying our silence. I think what it's trying to do is to sort of miss or redirect people's frustrations to say, well, yes, you know, we understand how frustrated you are and how angry you are. Now, give us a vision, and we promise, you know, pinky promise, we're going to implement it. We've been here before. Blah 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 blah. They're hoping that they can sort of pass off hope for the future in exchange for anger at the present. And I just don't think that's an equation that anyone's really interested in. There's just people's trust has just been too badly abused.
Yes.
Look, you know, having the Scorpions back is not a magic bullet. But yes, let's remember when President Mbeki was defenestrated, I think there were like 100 days or so until the next election. The first and only order of business was getting rid of the Scorpions.
Yeah.
I remember people, some of whom are still in executive positions, saying, you know, this is going to strengthen the fight against crime. Well, look, let's just say it didn't strengthen the fight against crime.
Yes, our crime rate actually started to go up after that.
There is nothing that would stop President Ramaphosa from not appointing particular people to his cabinet. I mean, you know, you don't even have to prosecute them. You just have to say, no, you don't get a cabinet position. You know, and this is a guy who insists on his executive prerogative.
Yes.
So no, you know, like it's just not serious. By the way, this is very much the it's a latter day successor to the kind of negotiation that the National Party was criticized for in the 1980s. Yes, you know, we'll talk to you. We'll give you a solution. Take it or leave it.
Yeah. Now, another sort of parallel, and correct me if I'm wrong here, because it was before my time, but my understanding of some of the National Party's politics in the 80s was once the Conservative Party started challenging them from the sort of more pro-apartheid side, they kind of almost became a bit obsessed with fending off that wing of politics. And that kind of, you know, that was almost essentially an internal debate within the National Party, even if they had officially split off. And that makes me think a lot of the ANC now is that they're sort of obsessed with the EFF MK threat. And making sure that they can't ever be accused of being sellouts of the revolution.
Yeah.
Look, even if that's losing them the rest of the country.
Look, remember something about the National Party. The National Party was the nationalist formation of the Afrikaner. It was the Afrikaner Nationalist Party. The breakaway, there had been splinters like Jaap Maria's Stichting Nationale Party, I think in 1969. Over the very fraught issue of, I think the spark for that was Maoris touring with the New Zealand rugby team, because you never know, you have a Maori in the team, next thing you have Nelson Mandela in office, and I don't know, maybe he was actually onto something there. There was a big falling out in the National Party over things like the tricameral constitution, but also P.W. Botha's style of leadership, and that led Andries Treenig, I think it was 21 other MPs, to walk out. And yes, that was, you know, the phrase used was "broeretwis," you know, the conflict among brothers. I think that they sometimes hyped up that threat to justify why they weren't prepared to make more expansive moves, which I think actually had a lot to do with general white opinion at the time.
Well, the ANC has made exactly the same arguments.
Sure, right? Yeah.
Say, oh, no, we can't do this because the masses of the people, even though it's not true, and we know that it's not true from our polling, demand BE and they demand land reform, et cetera, which is not actually the case. But the parallels are kind of amazing, actually.
Yeah. Look, you know, the thing is that I think Afrikaner nationalism is always a lot more coherent than African nationalism. I think the ANC has far more constituencies to try and balance. They're often in sharp contradiction to one another. But yeah, you know, to get South Africa moving, you've got to make a few hard choices, and you've got to accept, yes, some of your supporters and many of your backers and activists are going to slough off in that direction. You have to accept it. That's called modernization. The National Party was not able to do that. I don't think the ANC will be either. But if you want to get South Africa right, you need to move to a modernized mode of politics. I think perhaps some sort of ANC rump in the future, representing, you know, 15-20%, might still be able to carry that forward. But yeah. There's nothing to suggest that the current that in this current incarnation it's able to do that.
Yes, exactly. All right, let's address our last topic for today. This is just another one of those continuing embarrassment of South Africa from our DRC adventure. As anyone who's followed the story knows, South Africa deployed to support the government of the DRC fighting against Rwandan-backed rebels in eastern DRC around the city of Goma. We suffered a military defeat there and had our peacekeeping force taken prisoner. They were eventually extracted from the country, essentially sort of almost under guard by M23 rebels. And while much of the heavy equipment was removed, some of it remains. Indeed, 5 Oryx transport helicopters are apparently still in the DRC, sitting on the tarmac, one of them still riddled with bullet holes, where it was immediately sort of ditched, forced to you know, land. Government says that it's planning to bring these back, but that it's waiting for spare parts that it doesn't have and is on waiting lists for, and that this is all very expensive. However, the airport in where these things are is still controlled by M23, and no flights are allowed in or out. The South African military says that it has some soldiers on the ground to protect these helicopters from looting, and there are efforts being made to protect them from the weather. But Terence, I have a feeling at least some of those helicopters are never coming home. Now, there's 5 of them there, and apparently we have 39 in our inventory about that. So this is about an eighth of all of our Oryx transport helicopters. Just another humiliating part of this entire episode.
Modern war, particularly in rough terrain, you have to have helicopters. They've been a staple of military operations since the Korean War. Actually, fun fact, the first helicopters were actually kind of used in Germany in World War II. Very primitive and not widespread, but in Korea they showed their worth. The Americans pioneered them, albeit ultimately unsuccessfully, so on a strategic level, to get guys in and out of in Vietnam. For Africa, that's what you need. Big distances, you need to be able to carry groups of infantry, light equipment. Yes, they are very expensive. Armies are expensive things to maintain.
Just to add to that, you know, you don't just use them for military stuff. You use them for rescuing people from floods, as South Africa famously has done in the past.
Yeah. Look, I've said this before. If we are not going to actually properly capacitate the army, shut it down. This is not my preferred course of action. I think that we do need a military capacity, but when you are in this position where you literally can't get the carcasses of your transport helicopters out of a zone, and you are on a waiting list for spare parts, it's beyond tragic. It's farcical. So yes, you know, if you're going to try and do this on the cheap, it becomes dangerous, because then you can get discontented soldiers and rogue generals going off to other countries to pronounce on foreign policy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So as I say, my view is that either make the army combat worthy, or shut it down, take some of the people, put them into some sort of paramilitary border protection force, have proper helicopters to do that sort of policing work, and just say South Africa no longer has a military capacity. We really hope no one's going to attack us.
Yeah, no, a shocking state of affairs. And if they're wondering in the Tuli house why things just don't seem to be going well, well, you know, your management of this crisis is but one of many examples that might explain the situation that ANZ finds itself
in. The capacity of much of our state is embodied in the carcasses of those helicopters on the tarmac.
Yeah.
There you go.
No, exactly.
That's a question we can answer.
Yes. Yes. I like it. I hope that we have something a little bit more cheery to talk about tomorrow. Still, I hope you enjoyed the show, found it interesting, and we'll see you tomorrow on The Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.